good morning. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's show, we'll hear from the organiser of a rally happening in Denver tomorrow, calling for charges against Julian Assange to be dropped. After that, we'll hear about the psychology of money at this time when many people are anxious about their finances. We'll hear from somebody who talks about how we can maybe reduce some of our stress. Then two regular Friday morning features, a food waste tip from John Lendorf, followed by Trends Diary. At 8:30, Joel Edelstein is your host for Connections, and today's show, he'll ask, how can we make Black Lives Matter to law enforcement, and what is the role of racism in policing? He'll also examine the Defund the Police movement and find out what they're calling for. That's coming up on Connections at 8:30. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Six of the people protesting the death of Elijah McClain in rallies this summer now face years in prison. This is after two prosecutors filed multiple felony charges against them on Thursday. Steve Miller has more.
The Denver Post reports that all of the protesters, Lillian House, Joel Northam, Terrence Roberts, Whitney Lucero, Trey Quinn, and John Roosh, face felonies. The charges are connected to demonstrations held in Aurora on June 27th, July 3rd, July 12th, and July 25th. Among the charges are inciting a riot, engaging in a riot, obstructing a highway or passageway, and attempted first-degree kidnapping. Combined, the six protesters face 33 felony counts and 34 misdemeanor charges. Each faces years in prison if convicted. House, Northam, and Roberts have been the leaders of protests in Denver and Aurora over the summer. House and Northam were organizers for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. The Party for Socialism and Liberation have scheduled a march for noon Saturday at the Colorado State Capitol to protest the arrest. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The Aurora police have themselves been criticized for their handling of the protests this summer. Their use of tear gas prompted the city's Public Safety Committee to propose a ban on the use of pepper spray and tear gas. The committee is still working on that proposal before sending it to City Council for a vote. An Aurora police officer has been suspended without pay for 1 week for pointing a gun at a doctor's head while questioning him while he was in his parked car outside of a building that he owns. The Aurora Sentinel reports that on March 1st, Dr. PJ Palmer was questioned by Officer Justin Henderson outside of Mango House, that's a Colfax resource centre for local refugees. In a post on Medium.com describing the incident, Dr. Palmer wrote that the officer approached him, pointed his gun point blank at his head, repeatedly demanded for him to prove that it was his property. Dr. Palmer, whose parents immigrated from India, continued in the post, "As if a dark-skinned person doesn't own commercial buildings in the hood or tend to them on Sunday evening." Dr. Palmer told the Sentinel that the week suspension is not adequate punishment. He says the police pretty much have free rein to do whatever they want. Palmer's attorney David Lane has indicated that he plans to file a federal lawsuit against the city. That suit is yet to be formally filed. The committee tasked with considering changing the names of some geographic locations in the state say that they have already received 16 requests to change the names of mountains and open areas in the state, mainly because of the current name's derogatory connotations toward Native Americans or Black people. The Colorado Geographic Advisory Naming Board said in a statement Thursday that some of the proposals they've received include changing the name of Mount Evans in Clear Creek County and replacing it with Mount Cheyenne Arapaho. John Evans served as the second governor of the Colorado Territory, and there's a movement to rename several locations named for him because of his role in the massacre of peaceful Cheyenne and Arapaho Indians at Sand Creek. A new coronavirus testing site has opened in Boulder in response to a recent rise in cases. An appointment is not required and testing is free. People are asked to bring a form of identification to ensure that test results can be accurately recorded. Residents do not need to have COVID symptoms to be tested. Boulder County Public Health, though, says that anyone feeling severely ill should contact their healthcare provider or seek medical attention instead of visiting the testing site. Boulder County Public Health says the wait time for testing at the walk-up site has averaged about 30 minutes. That walk-up site is in the Pleasant Street parking lot at 1205 Pleasant Street, and the drive-through test site is at the Stasio Softball Fields. Hours for both sites are 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. 7 days a week. Test results can be expected within 24 to 48 hours, and residents who test positive will be contacted by Boulder County Public Health epidemiology staff for a follow-up. Warm and sunny is the forecast for the Front Range today. Highs in the 80s today and over the weekend. There is now an international movement calling for charges to be dropped against Julian Assange. In Denver, there'll be a rally tomorrow in Cheesman Park. I spoke with the organiser, Kendra Christian, with the Denver Action to Free Assange.
So I started Denver Action to Free Assange shortly after Julian Assange was arrested out of the Ecuadorian embassy. So I had actually searched for a group here and there wasn't one, and was just moved to start one because it was such a big deal. So we had our first rally June 1st, and we've been having those 1 to 2 a month, of course, until COVID came, and that put a little bit of a break on our rallies. But we did have one in the summer, and then, of course, we're having we've had 2 in September. But, you know, our group is it's not left or right. All political ideas are welcome. But our main focus is just free press. That's kind of the tenets of our group. Is we've all the politics aside, we have something bigger to concentrate on.
What take us through for people who may not be familiar with, you know, the ins and outs and the intricacies and the implications of what's happening right now with Julian Assange? What are the main concerns that you and the folks who've been coming to the Denver rallies, what are the main concerns that you have?
Okay, so the biggest concern for all of us here in the United States is that this is the first time that the government has prosecuted a publisher under the Espionage Act. So basically what that would do is give the government oversight on our free press, which pretty much negates free press. That's what free press is there for. You know, it's our fourth estate to hold our representatives to account. So that's an incredibly big issue. Up until now, only, you know, the leaker has been prosecuted. For instance, like Manning was prosecuted under the Espionage Act, but never a publisher. So that's a really big deal here. Internationally, what this precedent is setting right now with the extradition request is basically that any journalist anywhere could be charged under somebody's domestic spy laws. So that puts journalism at threat around the world. So this is actually, you know, it's a global movement. There's nothing to say that, you know, an American journalist traveling then somewhere in Southeast Asia, you know, couldn't be arrested by China, you know, with the same type of precedent and charged under their domestic spy laws. So it's a big deal for free press internationally, and it's a big deal for free press here.
Well, that being said, there is a lot more attention globally, internationally, and pressure being ramped up to free Assange because of concerns over the free press. As you said, it's not just a local issue, it's a global thing. And I know that 169 journalists and academics recently sent a letter to Boris Johnson, the PM in the UK, asking him to bring an end to the proceeding, really laying out the issues that you just laid out as well. Well, do you think we're getting enough response from, say, the mainstream press, from particularly the large media organisations, in calling for Julian Assange to be freed, given the implications for news reporting globally?
I really do not, considering what the implications are. We have seen some movement recently in the mainstream media. We did see something came up on Tucker Carlson. Bill Maher was mentioned on recently, and then I think Chris Hayes as well. But otherwise, you're correct. It's pretty much silence from the mainstream press. That's something that's also challenging for us as a grassroots organization. You know, it doesn't get the type of media coverage that, you know, people are used to seeing when there's a big issue going on. So it kind of flies under the radar. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that we try to focus on. We try to correct articles that come out that aren't correct. You know, we push out press releases for events, things like that. I also work with a group nationally called Action for Assange. And we were just in D.C., you know, doing a week-long protest there. So there is a lot of movement. We're just not seeing the coverage that it deserves.
Well, I know there are a lot of other organizations weighing in on this, civil rights, human rights organizations, and Amnesty International has their own petition around putting pressure on the US authorities to drop the charges against Assange. Given what's happening this month with the hearings that we're seeing in the UK, is there anything that's giving you any kind of optimism that all of this international attention is paying off in any way?
Well, you know, we're hopeful for that. One thing that did happen is, to your point, Amnesty International, also Reporters Without Borders, several parliamentarians. I think all in all, it was about 40 NGOs and different parliamentarians that were given access to observe the court proceedings over the video link. And on Monday, when the first day of the hearing began, those were all rescinded by the judge. So they no longer have access. So several of those people have made a video. Amnesty International has been, you know, speaking out loudly about this, that they, you know, they have no access to overview this hearing, which is really, you know, it's a huge public interest case. So that's very concerning. There have been several technical difficulties. Basically, the only way that the public can know what's going on is through, you know, reporters right now who are live tweeting. But there have been, like, every day there have been technical issues with them even being able to view all of the proceedings, or even having to, a couple days there, they had to, I think it was yesterday, they completely shut the proceedings down. So there are several issues with observing what's going on right now.
Well, there is this action happening in Denver on Saturday, September 19th. And as we said, this is really a global movement at this point. So take us through what people locally who are concerned about what's happening can do and how they can participate.
Well, one of the best places to visit is just to get an overview of the case is defendwikileaks.org. And then for us here, Denver Action to Free Assange, we are on Twitter at DNB3JA. And we also have a Facebook page that we just created. So you can find our event there. And you can RSVP and come. So our event will be, like you said, on the 19th at Cheeseman Park. You know, the best thing is to follow us, come to one of our events. Our email address is denveraction2freeja@protonmail.com, and people can email us to get on our email list. We send updates out for our rallies, for individual actions that people can take. One big thing that we're asking people to do is, you know, no matter what, just call your representative. Say, hey, I'm concerned. I'd like for you to speak out publicly in defense of our free press. So that's one thing we ask people to do. That's one of the biggest actions you can take, especially anybody who is a Trump supporter. It is, you know, we really need to put pressure on his administration as well. So that's, you know, one of the best things that we can do. Obviously, signing the petitions, but I think contacting our reps is one of the most effective things that we can do now, and let them know that this issue means a lot to us and we expect them to speak out about it.
So this rally is happening in Denver by the pavilion in Cheeseman Park, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is Saturday, September 19th. But that contact again is denveraction2freeja@protonmail.com. And that's the numeric 2, denveraction2freeja@protonmail.com. Any further actions planned given what's happening and the urgency of the situation?
Yeah, so we will have our rally on 9/19, and then some of it is, you know, pushing out the individual actions like I had discussed with you throughout the court case. I'm not sure if we'll have another one in September or not, but it's possible. But definitely we'll be having some type of event in October as well.
That's Kendra Christian with the Denver Action to Free Assange. That rally is happening tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Cheeseman Park in Denver by the Pavilion. You're listening to KGNU. The U.S. is the wealthiest country in the world, albeit with massive inequality. Money remains, however, the number one source of stress in the lives of 3 out of 4 Americans. Financial stress has profound negative impacts on physical health and psychological functioning, as well as relationships and even longevity. Dr. Bradley Klontz will address the psychology of money at an online presentation today for Interface Boulder.
Yeah, so I've been doing this work for quite a while, and surveys are very, very clear on this. So the American Psychological Association does a Stress in America survey every year. They've been doing it for about 15 years now. Money is the number one source of stress in the lives of Americans, even when times are great, which obviously they're not great right now. And so we're the wealthiest country in the world, yet this is the biggest source of stress in our lives as Americans. And so that's really what financial psychology is all about. It's trying to sort out why that's the case, because we already know what we should be doing around money. People don't save enough. We spend more than we make. That's the average American in good times. And so really it comes down to what is wrong with our thinking around money.
Well, of course, living in poverty is known to negatively impact not just your psychological, but your physical health as well. And the pandemic has exacerbated so much of that. It's also plunged many people into economic uncertainty, you know, like they've never experienced before. So, you know, what do you say to people who are anxious about money?
So in moments of crisis, it's different advice. So what I would encourage people to do, I call it the worst case scenario analysis, because the problem is that for most Americans, your finances won't actually kill you. Okay. However, your financial stress can kill you. And there's been a bunch of research on this. It's really, really dangerous to be living in that level of financial stress. So the worst case scenario analysis goes like this. If the worst thing happened, if I did lose my job, what would happen next? Well, you know, I might lose my house. So if you lost your house, what would happen next? Well, I'd have to probably move in with some relatives. And you just run down this train of the absolute worst case scenario. And for most of us, what we realize is, it wouldn't be that bad. Like, look, it would be terrible if I had to move out of my house. But I got to tell you, if we moved in with my parents or my wife's parents, it would probably be the best years of my kids' lives, to be honest. I mean, it'd be pretty brutal for me. And when you run that worst case scenario analysis, it's sort of like an exposure to your worst fears. For most people, it starts to calm that emotional, that animal brain, which is really focused on your survival. And if you're constantly giving it the message that you're at risk, your brain actually, it's sort of like an on-off switch. It's like either I'm going to die or everything's fine. And that's how it is physiologically. And that's what happens to us psychologically. And so we have to calm that part of our brain down in order to function optimally.
Dr. Bradley Klontz will speak about the psychology of money as part of the September Interface Boulder presentation. It happens this morning at 11:30 a.m. Find out more at interfaceboulder.org. And it's time now for another food waste tip from John Lendorf.
Hi, it's John Lendorf from KGN News Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, coffee and tea are among the most wasted foods, with millions of dollars going down the drain. Do this instead. First, use the right amount of coffee per pot so it's not just wasted. Also, you might be brewing expensive, organic, fair trade, organic grown, imported coffee. And don't throw it away simply because it was brewed yesterday. If you aren't willing to reheat it, put it in a bottle and call it iced coffee. Although it's not cold brewed, still yummy. Better yet, again, freeze it in an ice cube tray and then use those cubes to make iced coffee or mocha. That old coffee can also be added to stews and chilies, ice cream, and even the famous red-eye gravy. The same goes for tea and herbal infusions, hot or iced. They can also be cubed and saved. One of my favorite things is lemonade or lemon soda with iced tea ice cubes. Very tasty. And remember, tea and coffee grounds can always be composted. Find more food waste ideas and suggestions at news.kgnu.org.
can catch John Lendorf every Thursday morning on Radio Nibbles and here on Friday mornings with more tips on reducing food waste. Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation, Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, I'm Amanda Borman, Marketing and Community Relations Manager for the Humane Society of Boulder Valley, and I'd like to tell you a story about a sweet reunion that happened this summer. An adorable dog named Milo arrived at the Humane Society of Boulder Valley, and I saw his family pull up to our veterinary clinic and get out of the car. He was hunched over and looking very uncomfortable. Our veterinary team helped make him as comfortable as they could as they gathered details over the phone from his family. Overnight, Milo had become lethargic, refused to eat, and didn't want to go on his daily walk, and they didn't know what was wrong. They admitted to our team that they weren't sure how they were going to pay for any emergency care needed to save his life. They had both lost their jobs as their service and hospitality work employers had closed, but they wanted to do everything they could to get Milo the care he needed. That's when the HSBV team changed their lives. It was incredible. Our receptionist told them about the community-funded safety net program at HSBV and that they could get the help needed for Milo and keep him with their family, thanks to HSBV supporters. You could see the relief on their faces as they heard the news on their phone as they stood outside of our building. Milo ended up needing surgery for a blockage caused by something he had eaten and found in the trash. The culprit was a popsicle stick. Milo went home with his loving family the next morning after doing well in our clinic overnight. The day ended up great after a very heart-wrenching day before. I'm so grateful that HSBV has its safety net program to keep people and pets together through hardship and crisis. I can't think of a time where the love and companionship of a pet is needed more.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Thanks for listening to The Morning Magazine here at KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran.